there's $5 billion of debt collectively from contract chicken farmers. It's enormous. You're just treading water. You're just paying the bills. And it starts off great in the sense that you think you're going to make enough money, but you end up just paying bills and never getting ahead. And that's very typical.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Michael Pellman-Roland and Leah Garces. Michael is a financial advisor and he's on the board of Mercy for Animals. Leah is the president of Mercy for Animals. This was a live event that we did for the Transformation Project. They are working to end factory farming from the inside out by working directly with farmers to free them from a cycle of debt and convert them to plant-based farming. Michael and Leah were here to talk about it, and there's a short Q&A at the end. Michael, will you tell us a little bit about what you do, Mercy for Animals, and transformation, which is what we're here to talk about today?
Sure. In my day job, I am a financial advisor working with families on investing in impact, particularly around sustainable food. Since that's such an important topic for me personally, that's extended into my nonprofit work. And so I joined the board of Mercy for Animals a little less than 2 years ago. And, you know, one of the exciting things about Mercy for Animals is not only the great work that the organization has done historically, but in sort of the outside the box thinking about how to approach difficult challenges and come up with solutions. And we connected recently, Beth, on this topic of transformation. I thought it would be a great one to bring into the broader ecosystem and help people appreciate, you know, the reality, not just for animals, but for farmers and communities around, you know, the existing farm system and ways in which we could try to reinvent it.
Tell us exactly what it is and the idea behind it, because I think so many people understand now that factory farming, it's just hell for animals and it's hell for the environment. But I don't think a lot of people are familiar with how bad it is for the actual farmers.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, farmers have it really rough. I mean, it's always been a very challenging industry, but as the food companies have grown larger and larger, particularly in the US, but also globally, it's really put farmers in an increasingly tough spot, sort of often described as almost indentured servitude for most farmers. So if we look at the poultry farmers or chicken farmers as an example, in the US in particular, the average farmer holds around $700,000 in debt, and their income on their farm is on average anywhere between $13,000 and $18,000 a year. So what that means is that they basically have a negative net income, they have massive debt loads, they work 16-hour days, and they're in these contracts that are very difficult to get out of. In addition, they have these things called tournament, you know, sort of pricing or these tournament systems where every farmer is effectively competing against one another to produce the highest quantity of meat with the least amount of feed. Not only does this put them in a very variable income position year over year, but it also starts pitting them against their neighbor. And so when you start to look at the realities of how the farming system is set up for most farmers in the US, particularly small farmers, they're overly indebted, have very low income, and are stuck in these contracts, and they didn't really know how to get out of them, which is why, sadly, the suicide rate for farmers in the US is 3.5 times the national average. And many families are having a difficult time getting the next generation to want to enter those businesses. And so the goal of this initiative was, how can we start seeing farmers as allies and as partners in this goal to reinvent the food system that not only touches, as you said, the animals and the environment, but also touches the farmers on those farms and as a result, the communities that those farms are operating in.
But so take me through it. So say I'm a farmer, a chicken farmer, and I'm in $1 million in debt and I don't make a tenth of that a year. there's no way out. Like, you're just stuck and the chickens keep coming and you have to keep buying more equipment and taking on more debt. And then, so you guys come in, and how does that work? How do I get out of debt? Can you go through the details a little bit?
We start off with the contract and look at whatever contract they're in and see what avenues exist to get them out of that contract. Secondarily, then it's about helping them transition away from their current business model into a new one to increase their income and thus be in a position to start paying down their debt. One of the issues is that for these farmers, you know, they'll make massive investments in their farm, they'll start paying down their debt, you know, get them into a decent position where the debt load is lower, and then the companies, let's say at Tyson or Purdue, will say, hey, we need you to retrofit your farm now with all this new equipment or all these new instruments. And so now they'll have to, you know, tack their debt all the way back up. And so part of it is about not just getting them out of their situation to get them into a higher income, but also to get them out of this need to consistently be upgrading their facilities with high cost equipment that basically keeps them in perpetual debt. And then it's also about helping them understand the best practices so they can maximize the yield of whatever inputs they're trying to grow. And then also to connect them with the buyers of those inputs so that they will hopefully have a consistent and growing stream of purchasers who will be happy to offload whatever it is they're growing.
So far, what's been the response from the farming community when they learn about transformation?
I'd say it's a combination of excitement and skepticism. And so at the same time, there's a lot of desperation and solution seeking on the part of farmers that really don't see a sustainable path out of the jams that they're in. And so really the key is to find folks that are in the farming community or that are trusted by the farming community to be the ones to approach those farmers to say, hey, you know, we know what you're dealing with and there's some solutions out there. Would you be open to having a conversation kind of thing? But, you know, transformation is a new initiative. We just launched it this past year. And as you can imagine with COVID, it wasn't the ideal environment to be going around trying to meet farmers and doing a lot of engagement. So what was surprising and very encouraging is that all the farmers that we've signed up to the program thus far have been inbound. They found us. They found us through the website or through other means and said, hey, you know, we're kind of stuck. You know, we're in a tough situation. We want to, you know, hear what you have to say. And so that's given us a lot of confidence that, you know, we're onto something here. And it's also been backed by some very, you know, generous grants that we have through some of our, you know, donors and partner organizations to begin to take this out of what it was basically a test phase this year and really start rolling it out to a more substantial program in 21 and beyond, both in the US, but also in other important markets like Brazil, India, and China.
And are the situations in Brazil, India, and China similar in the sense that the farmers are almost like indentured servants?
Yeah, this is a model, right? So it's not like the US is unique in that regard. So, you know, by and large, most smallholder farmers around the world are in very similar situations where they make very little money. They're in very tough sort of circumstances and are looking for ways to not only increase their incomes, but improve their community and the lives of their families alongside of it. And so this is our initiative to leverage the contacts we have within the food system, to take advantage of the growing demand for plant-based inputs for things like mushrooms, hydroponics, hemp, and other things that are very well suited to chicken coops because they're sort of dark, enclosed, damp environments that those inputs are particularly appropriate for, and connect those farmers with, you know, CPG companies and others that are looking to buy these kind of inputs. So we're trying to sort of create an ecosystem where farmers, consumers, and companies can all sort of benefit from creating a platform to help these farmers get out of the jams that they're in and get into a thriving business that not only can help them make more money, but certainly improve their mental and physical well-being and improve the health outcomes of the communities as well. Because a lot of farms are really toxic for the communities that they're in, whether it's the air quality, the water table, and others. And those tend to be predominantly in communities of color.
And so why mushrooms and hemp? Why is that the ideal place to transition?
Well, for a couple of reasons. One is they're growing markets. So the demand for both of those inputs are growing quite rapidly year over year. Secondarily, they tend to grow very well in the conditions that chicken coops create, which is sort of dark, damp environments. So those two factors make them ideal as a starting point. But I'll stress that There are many options, including hydroponics, that can be explored as well. But those are just, you know, two of the, you know, sort of the low-hanging fruits, if you will.
Look, it's our special guest. Hi, Leah.
Hi. Hi. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. For those of you who don't know, this is Leah Garces, who is the president of Mercy for Animals and the woman of the hour in terms of what, who knows about chicken farmers and chicken farming. Thank you, Leah, for being here. And if you haven't seen Leah's TEDx talk, it's now on the TED main page and has well over 1 million views. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I just want to hear from you, Leah, why this matters, why transformation matters.
That's a great question. And I think one of the main blocks to us making progress to end factory farming is getting rural communities on board with that. Because rural communities really rely, in terms of their economy, in terms of just cash in their pocket, on factory farming. But it's at great cost to the communities, to the environment, and of course, to the animals. So the project is about creating constructive solutions where we come in and work with communities, with farmers, finding alternatives, especially alternative economies, alternative ways of farming that move farmers away from factory farming to something that's regenerative and sustainable and is creating a compassionate food system.
Will you talk a little bit about how you got into all this to begin with?
Yeah, my story around this starts around 2014, where I had my first encounter with a real live factory farmer, a chicken factory farmer named Craig Watts. And through my partnership with him, I was able to really understand that it wasn't just the chickens suffering immensely under this system, that it is a system that oppresses farmers too. And Craig, like many farmers, is trapped in debt. And he took out a big loan to build these warehouses, and he built the warehouse. And then the only way to pay the debt off is to continue to raise chickens, like a mortgage, year after year, month after month, flock after flock. So if he wants out, there's really not an alternative option. And after a while, Craig and many other farmers realize, I hate this job. This job is essentially a chicken babysitter, but a babysitter of really sick, tortured animals. And a lot of farmers we talk to want to get out. So after a while, working with Craig, I started to reach out to other farmers, and I met someone named Mike Weaver. He lives in West Virginia. He worked for Pilgrim's Pride, and the conditions were horrible, and he wanted out. So he converted his houses to hemp. And from there, I came to Mercy for Animals. And in November 2000, last year, whatever year we're in, I don't even know.
19.
Yeah, pre-pandemic. 19. Pre-pandemic, we launched the project called Transformation, which is this vision that we're going to partner with contract chicken farmers and other farmers, but initially contract chicken farmers, to build an alternative with them and really get, when I imagine the kind of arc of change, I imagine there is a tipping point in which we go from an animal-based economy to a plant-based economy. And transformation is about building and constructing the other side of that tipping point. And I'm really excited about our first year. We had our pilot year this year, and it's been beyond successful. We have a line of farmers wanting to work with us now.
How many did you do for your pilot?
So this year we've been working with 5. That was our objective. And I'll just tell one story that I feel really exemplifies the power of this project, which is the Haley family. And they live in Northeast rural Texas. And they had 12 chicken houses. So each of those chicken houses were raising tens of thousands of animals. And their father was a vet and a pillar in the community and raised chickens. But it was really hard on him. And he died quite early and of a heart attack. And his he had two sons and a daughter. And the two sons are twins. And they were only 14 when he died. And they had to take over. The mom was an accountant outside the home. And this changed the kind of trajectory of these boys' lives. And it created a lot of hardship and problems for them. They had a lot of mental health problems and physical health problems. They had drug addiction. It's a horrible life. And in the end, it tore the family apart for years until one day the daughter saw our Mike Weaver video wrote to us and said, we need help. Can we do this? And we started working and planning and plotting, literally plotting. We plotted hemp seeds in the ground with them. And just in August, I went with our team and we pulled up and harvested hemp, like 5 foot high plants. We took it out of the ground. And the beautiful thing about it was the twins, who are, you know, now in their early 40s, came back. The daughter was there. Her daughter, who's 21, was there. She had come back from being a bartender in San Diego. And then the daughter's partner, who has a son who's 15, was there. So there was like six of us coming back, you know, six of them coming back together as a family. So it's not just about rebuilding, you know, the land and getting away from something that is cruel, but it's also about creating thriving families and communities that have been torn apart by factory farming. It's so beautiful in every kind of aspect, and I'm so proud to be working on it. These farmers are even talking about creating a cooperative because they're going to, right now, they're sending the hemp away to be processed in Colorado, actually. We're working with a company called Tindicon there. Eventually, they're hoping to get enough farmers in this community that you can create a processing plant for the hemp, and then they can be bottling and selling and distributing right from there. So you can see how they can reclaim their community and they can create their own economy and their own system for helping their community thrive and be sustainable into the future.
This is the future.
I hope so. I hope so.
In terms of income, when the transition happens from, you know, chickens to something like hemp or mushrooms, how does that scale?
I mean, the math works out really well. So on hemp, mushrooms, we're still working out. We haven't had a totally successful transition yet. We're still in the early days for that. But hemp is amazing. So Mike Weaver says that he had two warehouses and he only made about $7,000 profit from those each year. And that's, some farmers make no profit. Some farmers are in debt and upside down and losing money.
From 20,000 chickens?
40,000. He had two houses. So yeah, because you're just treading water. You're just paying the bills. And it starts off great in the sense that you think you're going to make enough money, but you end up just paying bills and never getting ahead. And that's very typical. There's $5 billion of debt collectively from contract chicken farmers. It's enormous. It will require a government intervention for us to overcome this, which is part of transformation's objective, is to look at debt relief for farmers. And actually, Cory Booker in January this year introduced the Farm Systems Reform Act. And a major piece of that is debt relief for these farmers to transition out. And that's what we're going to need. We're really going to need legislative intervention, debt relief, and subsidies to switch from supporting things like factory farming and to regenerative, compassionate ways of farming.
What's the bigger goal? So if you start with five this year, and where does it go?
We have big, big idea. Our big goal is 1,500 farmers, not just in the US, but in India and Brazil. So India and Brazil have very similar contract farming systems and indentured servants, essentially. They're indentured servants to these loans that they have to take out. And our goal is not just to transition the farmers ourselves, but to create a spark, to ignite a change and organize farmers who are fighting against factory farming themselves and create a hub and a network and an umbrella of organized farmers and people supporting those farmers to get a worldwide movement to end factory farming from inside, you know, from the bottom up, from the people closest to the farms, literally on the farms.
Do you have any plans for Europe?
No. We don't at the moment.
And why is that?
But what I hope is to, because we did have some really inspirational folks in Poland writing us and saying, hey, can we start like a branch? Can we work together? And we keep getting that. We keep getting people who, this is really like an idea whose time has come. So yeah. We really are thinking of creating an umbrella that everyone can work together. So we're the central kind of organizer and coordinator for everyone to come together and learn off of each other and share information, resources. So look out for that in the new year.
We have a question from Barbara King. Hi, Barbara. Thank you for this wonderful project. Can you describe the process of reducing gradually those huge numbers of chickens over time. How does this happen?
So I'm assuming on the farm or as a system as a whole, I guess, part of our goal is to literally reduce the number of factory farms and reduce the number of animals as a result that are farmed. And we're working with a farmer right now where we're actually working on that. One of the ways that we do it with him, he has four warehouses and we do one warehouse at a time until his economic model worked out because he still has this massive loan he has to pay off. So he has to kind of show viability to the bank and begin to slowly transition and show success. So a lot of the farmers we work with, they kind of first do it in a warehouse, like in their backyard. And then once they figure out how to grow hemp, then they're taking one of those four warehouses out. So that's 20,000 birds out. And then that's successful. They move to the second one, the third, and the fourth until they can completely transition over. And in some cases, they're talking about growing hemp outside if the weather is good enough in between the houses and really thinking about how to regenerate the soil. So the idea is that we just keep doing that. And warehouse by warehouse, we're reducing the number of chickens that are farmed by 20,000 at a time or 30,000 at a time, depending on how many there are, how many houses and how many chickens.
Will you talk a little bit about soil? Because that's such a big part of this and such a big part of what's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, chicken farming, a lot of people think of environmental impact and they just think of greenhouse gas emissions. And so then they leave chickens out of that equation. But environmental impact and our like food sovereignty and ability to feed ourselves goes way beyond that. And arable land and water and air pollution are a big component of that. And for the most part, chicken farming is not regulated. For example, in North Carolina, you do not have to get any kind of environmental permit, and you don't even have to tell the government where you're locating your poultry farms. So they're set up with no environmental assessment and no environmental impact assessment after they're set up. And so the repercussions on our water and our air and our land are vague. We don't know, but we know from the people like the water keepers that it's one of the highest inputs of phosphorus in the water and really destructive. So we're really excited about the switch in the kind of measurements we can do around improving arable land quality, for example. I didn't know this before, but I'm learning a ton about hemp. It has a regenerative quality. So when you plant it in the ground, it can clean the soil. So one of the farmers we're working with is planning on putting the male Goliath plant inside the warehouse to clean the soil of all the junk that was there from when the chickens were living there, clean it, and then tear it down and be able to have this clean, regenerated soil.
What a better life, too, for these guys. Just to wake up and be doing that instead of picking up dead chickens out of the piles.
Yeah, and I think that's why we saw in this one family, the young people coming back, because young people don't want to do this. They don't want to. They've seen their parents suffer, their grandparents suffer, and they don't want to do it. But then you say, hemp? This 21-year-old woman came back and was like, I'm going to do tinctures, and I'm going to do this and that. And she's excited, and she's innovating with her mom and her uncles. And that's so beautiful. That's such a beautiful story.
Another question. Do you find other types of farmers, like dairy or pigs, are as open to the change as you found with the chicken farmers?
We are, in fact, working with a pig farmer. We just started working with a pig farmer, and we have had quite a few dairy farmers. So dairy farming is in a really bad place, and you might be aware that it has one of the highest suicide rates, sadly, for the farmers, because there seems to be no future economic model for this. And while that's great for the cows, it's terrible for farming communities. And so one way to accelerate that change without causing suffering to the communities is to really think, how can they switch to oats? And there are stories and there are farms that have switched to oats, for example. But we also think hemp could be something that could, and there are some farmers who are playing with hemp and dairy. And again, the idea is you kind of transition one, as one becomes more economically viable, they leave the dairy behind.
Well, and I would imagine with each farmer that goes through this and then the transition and then their life transforms, a lot more farmers just keep wanting to get on board. It's got to be contagious.
Yeah, the one video we did with Mike Weaver is what's bringing us the most farmers. Farmers seeing another farmer do this and talk about the benefits has been the single biggest impetus for us getting new farmers.
I love this. I love transformation. I'm so excited about it. And I can't wait. It's just going to grow exponentially year after year. So
I hope so. Thank you. I hope that in this year of, it was a difficult year, that this is a little sliver of hope for everybody to think about, you know, change can happen fast. Change is around the corner, and to remain hopeful.
Awesome.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you, Michael. It's great to see you both.
To learn more about the Transformation Project, go to our website. We will have links to everything. It's speciesunite.com. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare minute and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you would like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. We're on Patreon. It's patreon.com/speciesunite. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Natalie Martin, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.